is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, thanks for following me on Twitter, at Paul Harris Show. And on my website, harrisonline.com, which you can find through the station's website, ktrs.com. The 2013 edition of the Consumer Electronics Show has been going on in Vegas for the last week or so, and my friend Perry Simon has been out there covering it. Perry is the News Talk sports editor for allaccess.com and editor-in-chief of nerdist.com, and joins me now live from L.A. Hi, Perry. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul.
So you go there expecting to see all sorts of cool new stuff, and what's the one or two things you came back and said, okay, that qualified as cool?
Okay, the coolest thing was, oddly enough, something that I saw at the smallest, most out-of-the-way booth in the place, and that was a 3D printer. Now, there are several different iterations of 3D printers, but what that means is this. You go on the computer, you design something in three dimensions, and it prints it out. It actually manufactures stuff. Now, it's still in its infancy, but one of the applications that they're talking about doing is they could actually create a printer that uses human cells, and they could literally print out transplant organs. They can make, right now, with plastics, they can make parts like nuts and bolts and things like that. Very simple. It takes a while. It's very primitive, but you could see that the Jetsons, you know, the kind of things you saw in the Jetsons where George would press a button and a meal would come out, they're getting toward that. Things are happening in that area that are just astonishing. And while the main part of CES involves big screen TVs and connected cars and things like that, that was the thing that actually caught my eye the most, because that is something that you just don't see, you don't even think about, that it's possible that, you know, in a very short time, there are things that are going to be automated that nobody thought possible. That was pretty astonishing, and I thought that it was especially telling that when they asked the FCC commissioners who were at a panel at the conference what the most impressive thing they saw at the show was, they all said 3D printers. They all were caught by that, too. It had nothing to do with communication, nothing to do with electronics in the consumer sense, but that was amazing. That was something that I looked at and thought, man, I'm witnessing the future.
I have seen
the rest of the show is it's a lot of large, you know, it's a room full of big screen TVs and iPhone cases.
Yeah,
you know, but
I've seen
3D printers are amazing.
I've seen videos of some of the stuff that people have been able to make on this. Fairly simple things, like, you know, somebody made a wrench or somebody made a toy airplane or that sort of stuff. You know, here's nothing existed here before, and now we're creating this, and it comes out and works. But you're saying that they're going to not only be able to make things with working parts, but even more complex than that?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's in its extreme infancy. A lot of it is, you know, either prototype or just projections, but they are talking about that kind of stuff. And they're talking about medical uses. They're talking about making artificial or semi-artificial organs and other body parts. People are thinking way ahead of the curve on this stuff, and I'm excited about that. That, to me, was the future. More immediate future, things that people will actually see in stores this year and be able to buy. The big thing, there are two big things, I'd say. One would be the 4K TV, which is the next stage of high definition. It's double the resolution of the current high definition television. And you'll see that start to hit stores this year. It's going to be very expensive for a while, but the picture is pretty impressive. The thing about it, though, is it's more impressive when you have a standard definition or a high definition TV sitting next to it so that you can compare.
Yeah.
You can see that there's a difference. But I always question whether people are willing to spend 10 times what they would spend on a regular HDTV on one of these things, especially when the content isn't available that easily yet.
Right.
It will be. And things that people, one thing that was stressed to me by people who are in the business on that end is that movies have been shot in effectively in 4K for several years now. So, for example, Sony is going to be selling an ultra high definition TV later this year, and when you buy it, you'll also get a server, a box that will connect to the internet and connect to the set, and will contain, when you buy the box, when you buy the package, it'll have 10 movies preloaded onto it, and those are all in 4K. So you'll have something to watch. You just won't have a wide range of stuff available right away, and you'll be paying through the nose. But if you want to impress people with the best picture they've ever seen on a television set, that's coming later this year.
But every time that they've improved television technology, I mean, you go back to the days, you know, you and I are old enough to have grown up with black and white TVs, and then, you know, one kid you knew, his parents had bought a color TV, and you went over there and was like, oh, my God, look at that. That is so expensive. Nobody's ever going to be able to afford that. And, of course, now everybody got that. And then the same thing when HD TVs came out, either in the plasma form or in the LED form, you know, they were $15,000. Who's ever going to be able to afford that? And now you can get, you know, $249 for a 42-inch monitor at Costco. So
sure, you can get a basic 720p HD TV. You can get for $200 or less at this point. And yeah, it comes down when it becomes ubiquitous. But the I think the curve, it's going to be interesting. I think because we've seen technologies that were pitched as a major advance kind of fizzle. The biggest one being 3D TV.
Yeah.
Which for the last few years had been the big thing at CES, and really nobody rushed out and bought them. So there's a new thing this year. There's a new angle that they're taking on 3D TV that you're going to see pushed a little bit, although I look at this as in the category of something that seems like a really good idea but you'll never actually use, and it's this. Using 3D technology but not putting the programming in 3D, they want to have it so that you have two programs to watch at the same time with the same set by two different people. What I mean by that is you and another person could be sitting there wearing separate glasses watching two different shows in full screen on the same set.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
No, it's not. No. I'm going to stop you. That's not cool. Because it's like having to wear those 3D glasses at the movies. You're going to feel like a nitwit having to sit there in your own house looking at your own TV, and you have to put on special glasses.
Right, you could be sitting there, and your wife is watching something very serious, and you're watching something really funny, and you're laughing the whole time.
Yeah, she's watching Downton Abbey, and you're watching Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Well, that's the idea. That they also are pushing this as something that you'd use if you want to watch the football game and your kid wants to play a game on the Xbox, and the two of you could be doing the two different things. And wow. I guess the Samsung version has the glasses have earbuds in them, so you actually get a different soundtrack as well. So
you're not really spending time together. You're in the same room.
You know, yeah. we have a low-tech version of that in my house. It's called The Basement.
But that was something that they're throwing out there, and I got the distinct impression that they're doing it because they have a load of stuff with 3D technology and not a lot of demand for it.
Yeah.
So, but that's, you know, CES is like that. It's a place where they pitch the next big idea and they don't always sell. And then there's also the weird stuff, like the most striking one that I ran into was the fork that effectively tells you when you're overeating. It vibrates when you're eating too fast.
Oh my goodness!
And I swear that it was demonstrated in two different evening events that I went to, and at both the crowds around that were larger than the crowds around practically anything else.
What?
Really fascinated by the idea of a vibrating fork.
Oh,
that feeds your information about what you're eating and how you're eating to. You can had like a USB connection. You can download stuff.
Get out of here! You know what? I invite you on the show to do a serious report about the CES, and you're making stuff up.
Now is that
you know what? Here, Google this. It's called the Happy Fork. HAPIFORK.
Is that dishwasher safe?
It's real. It's real, and it's not spectacular. But there were a lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff like. Table PCs. They're really actually creating the stuff that you would see on CSI Miami or in Minority Report, where you gesture and things get projected and that kind of, that stuff. The technology exists or will exist soon. And the question I have whenever I see all this stuff is, are people asking for this stuff? Do people really want it? Would they actually use it? Some of it, the answer is yes. I mean, obviously, HDTVs became common, and I think a lot of the connected stuff, I think one thing you will see, the connected car is a very big deal, and I was talking to somebody at Ford, and they are seeing in their research that having those dashboards where there's all sorts of stuff, like, you know, internet connection through your phone, but, you know, apps and navigation and everything just on your dashboard, that makes a difference in terms of people making a decision what car to buy.
Yeah.
And there was an announcement with Ford, followed closely by Chevy and Chrysler, that they're opening up the dashboard to developers to create apps. In fact, the Ford one is done with a prominent company in radio that does apps for radio stations. So you're going to see this thing just explode as people replace their cars. The dashboard entertainment system is getting much more sophisticated, and it's a lot of competition for radio. The question is whether people are going to get used to the complicated systems that are going in there, but right now, they're saying that people are definitely making their decisions on what cars to buy based on, in part at least, on what they can get on the dashboard. And Ford is benefiting from that because their sync system has been ahead of the game.
You know, Perry, I remember a conversation you and I had. I was out there on vacation several years ago, and I met you for lunch at a restaurant somewhere, I think in Hermosa Beach, maybe.
I think it was Santa Monica.
Santa Monica, okay. And one of the things you and I discussed, because we come up with million-dollar ideas and then don't make any money from them all the time, was that someday you'd be able to drive along in your car, and the buttons on your radio, instead of just being for a local radio station like 550 AM or 96.3 FM or, you know, whatever it is, or, you know, XM, whatever it would be, instead of being for local frequencies, would be for streams of radio stations. So if you were driving along in California, you could punch up KTRS.com. You'd have a button already preset for that you'd arranged manually ahead of time, and that would come right up there. Or you'd be able to dial through things on there like you can through some apps like TuneIn Radio, and you'd be able to listen to those, but it would already be embedded in the system. And at that point, you no longer need an antenna in the car to listen to over-the-air radio. You need an internet connection, maybe a cell phone connection or something else, and then you can listen to streams from anywhere. And now you're putting this radio station on a footing with every other radio station in the world, plus on a footing with Pandora and Spotify and all those other things that stream audio of all kinds into the cars. That has to be part of the future of where this is going, right?
It's there. I mean, I think as you get these new cars, that capability is already there. If you have an older car, you can still do it, and it's a little bit more complicated than the average person wants to get into, but I'll give you an example. I have an old car, and I replaced the head unit of the stereo with a new one, and this one has Bluetooth, and this one has, it's pretty much state-of-the-art. It's got, you know, it's got AC radio, it's got Bluetooth, it's got, you know, USB ports, and you can connect your iPhone to it. And I was driving, I drive to and from Vegas, and in the middle of the desert, there's not a whole lot to listen to on the radio, and I didn't feel like listening to the music on my on the iPhone. So I was listening to streams from all over the place, and it was just going, you know, Bluetooth audio right over my car stereo. I'm absolutely in the middle of nowhere in the Mojave Desert, and I'm listening to stations from all over the country.
And you're choosing those on your phone, and it's streaming through Bluetooth into your car stereo, but it's not to the point yet where your car stereo has those stations embedded in them, and you choose them that way on that app there.
But it's coming.
Yeah.
And not only is it coming, but in systems like Ford Sync or Chevy's MyStar, it exists now. They have apps on the dashboard that effectively are just one touch and you're there. They do go through your phone. The connectivity is through your phone, but the controls are on the dashboard, and in some cases, they're right on the steering wheel. You can just hit a button on the steering wheel, and it will select whatever's on the screen that you want, and you're there. So it's there. It's just not at critical mass yet. Not everybody has it. In a few years, everybody's going to have it. And at that point, all bets are off, and it becomes a situation where you know, there's AM, there's FM, there's satellite, and there's practically every stream in the world.
Yeah.
And the question is just going to be deciding what you want to access quickly, but that's what the apps are for. The apps will be how you decide, you know, say if you want to listen to KTRS and you live someplace outside of St. Louis and you know that you're going to be listening to that on a regular basis, you take the KTRS app, put it on the dashboard, and then from then on out, anytime you want to listen, just hit a button. That becomes that button that we were talking about.
Yeah.
So one touch and you've got whatever station you want from around the world.
That's great. All right, a couple of other quick things I heard about from CES. I heard that the Audi has a car that parks itself.
Oh, yeah. Those are always big, and I've seen them, and it's interesting, and I don't know that I would trust it. I think I'd be white knuckling it if I were
yeah.
in a car, and I saw, 'cause here's the thing: if I'm trying to parallel park, at the very least, I know I'm about to bump the car behind me. So I'm careful. I'm going slow. Whatever. If I hit that button, I'm trusting the system that it's going to know when to stop, and I'm sure it does. I've watched it. It does it. I'd be frightened until the car stopped.
Yeah.
would just be expecting a disaster.
Well, we have the Google cars on the roads now that are driving by themselves all over the place. So
they actually displayed, Lexus actually had one of their experimental, you know, I guess Toyota is doing experiments on that with cars that have the cameras on the top and sonar and radar and everything, and they're testing it out, but they said that it's many years away, and they tellingly did not have the car moving. They just had it sitting on the stage.
Uh-huh.
So
that's not very impressive.
No.
Well, as far as I know, it was just as far as I know, there wasn't even an engine in it.
I think Jeff Bridges pulled that off of the movie Tucker like 20 years ago, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it could very well have been a fiberglass model, but they insisted that it was real, but that it's not ready for prime time, and they are, they're estimating, 10 to 20 years before something like this is even remotely ready to be real world tested. But we know that Google's done some real world testing, and it's, I don't know. We'll see. And I think it will be a thing when every car is like that. But until then, until there's human error removed from every car on the street, I'll be skeptical.
Yeah, it's not. I don't have a problem parking my car. It's the other people parking their cars who I have a problem
yeah,
with. And
there you go.
Yeah. Now, last thing I got to ask you about goes back to the first thing you mentioned, the 3D printer. Can I buy a 3D printer that makes a refill toner cartridge for the printer? Because that's where I'm spending more money than on the actual printer.
I think that it's going to be a while before they figure that out, and then you have to figure out whether they could make a 3D printer that makes a 3D printer that makes a toner cartridge, and then you just get into a situation I don't think we want to follow.
Perry Simon is the News Talk sports editor of AllAccess.com and editor-in-chief of Nerdist.com. Went to the CES this week in Las Vegas. Thanks for your report, Perry. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.